With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Welcome to Face to Face. This is a show about change and what's next. It's a show that asks questions and peels back the layers of our average everyday experience and goes beyond scratching the surface. We interview people doing incredible things who are making a difference around the globe. Join me as we listen in and get one step closer to understanding that big ideas shared create collaboration. Collaboration can inspire community, and communities create social change. I'm David Peck, and this is Face to Face.
Well, welcome back to Face to Face. Thanks for joining us for another interview and another Hot Docs interview, a film by the name of Theater of Violence. Hope you're going to get down to Hot Docs to check it out, hotdocs.ca. Look them up online. And I had the pleasure of chatting with Emil Langval and Lucas Canapa, their new film called Theater of Violence. And it's a incredibly moving film and incredibly compelling film. It's a story of a Ugandan, Dominic Ongwen. He was the first, or is the first former child soldier ever to be indicted by the ICC, the International Criminal Court in The Hague, for war crimes. And Ongwen was abducted at the age of 9 by Joseph Kony. Some of you may remember the Lord's Resistance Army. They are still a thing. And I mean, we're talking about forced detention and brainwashed and, you know, to perpetrate these violent crimes that Dominic's ultimately charged with. And it raises some deep, deep questions about a lot of things. This isn't just a philosophical film. This isn't just a legal piece, an exercise, you know, academically. This really does have many questions and many insights for us all. We talk about the argument of nature versus nurture, and what does oppression actually look like in a community context, in a family context, maybe in a, well, and also in a governmental context as well. We talk about restorative justice and about context and about so many assumptions that are made about African, and in this case Ugandan, and in even Northern Ugandan culture, and what are the implications of that? Where do we wind up when we make these global assumptions about other people and other cultures? And instead of saying, "Hang on a second here," we need to step back and we need to listen a little more closely. We need to ask some better questions, and then maybe make an assessment of one kind or another. All the while, hopefully, building relationship along the way. We talk about Christianity's role in this conflict. And we talk about what amnesty actually means, and radicalization, and this whole notion of how retributive judgment is really, and punishment is really not working. Fascinating film, fascinating conversation. Just absolutely thrilled to have Emil and Lucas on the show on Face to Face here, celebrating their film Theater of Violence. It is I believe the North American premiere of the film in the special presentation section at Hot Docs. So look for it as well. Post Hot Docs online and search for it, and hopefully you'll be seeing it on a video on demand platform in the not so distant future. Don't forget DavidPeckLive.com. realchangeisincremental.com for more information about my writing and my speaking. You can get a copy of Real Change is Incremental there. And if you're listening to the podcast on YouTube or on your favorite channel, please subscribe to the channel or to Face to Face on the channel or on YouTube. Give us a thumbs up. Please leave a review. We'd really appreciate it. So if you head to my site, davidpecklive.com or facetofacelive.ca, it'll bring you to the same place and you'll be able to access lots of information about what I'm up to, but also more importantly, the conversations that I've been publishing over the last, it's coming up on 10 years. Can you believe that? That's just crazy talk. Over 600 published interviews online and many more on YouTube. You can find them many places, but mostly it's at facetofacelive.ca and that'll get you to your player of choice. Please leave us a review. We'd really appreciate it. Thanks again for your support and for listening, but stay tuned for my conversation with Emile Langmaur and Lucas Canapa talking about their new film, Theater of Violence. Well, welcome to Face, and welcome to Hot Docs 2023. We are joined by two very special guests here today. We have Emile Langmaur and Lucas Canapa here with us to talk about their new film, their difficult, compelling, and beautiful new film, Theater of Violence. Thank you to you both for joining us here today on the show.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, it really is. Always, I always take it as a real privilege. You know, I love, as my listeners know, I love a good conversation, even if it's not being recorded. And, you know, the beauty of putting these things down and on record is that I hope people can go back to them and peel back layers. And it seems to me it's a different kind of storytelling, having a great conversation. And thank you for a great film. I mean, congratulations on the film. It really is brilliant and very, very challenging in so many ways. And Grand Jury Prize winner at Movies That Matter. So congratulations on that as well.
Thank you.
So thanks again for joining me today. I wonder if one of you could just sort of, Emile or Lucas, step in and just give us a little bit of an overview. We'll try not to, you know, spoil, I suppose, the film in a sense, but a lot of this is history that's been going on for many, many years. Can you, one of you, Emile, give us an overview of Theater of Violence as we step into this conversation?
So the film is about a trial in the International Criminal Court in The Hague. And the guy on trial is this former child soldier called Dominic Ongwen. He was 9 years old when he was kidnapped in the northern Uganda and indoctrinated and turned into a soldier. And now, many years later, he's in his 40s, and he is tried at the court for the same crimes that were committed against himself, basically. So it's about many questions, but I guess one of the big questions that we're asking is he a victim or a perpetrator or both, and how do we deal with a man like Dominic Ongwen?
Well, and the thing it seems to me too, Emile, is that this is so not just a one-off. I mean, history has shown us that this is, you know, you have the Khmer Rouge in Cambodia, you have Rwanda. There's so many pieces of our very recent history where, I guess, lessons learned from a trial like this, from a film like this, are just kind of lurking there on the surface, but also as you go a little deeper. Lucas, I mean, when you guys stepped into this story, into this, you know, maybe you didn't even know if there was a film there when you started, but what were some of the questions you were asking when you stepped in, when you first started principal photography?
We got interested in this project when we read about the beginning of the trial. And both Emile and I, we went to Uganda before with other projects. So we heard about the story of the LRA and we heard about Dominic Ongwen. And when the trial started, we knew that actually we have a film because it was like a perfect structure to delve into all these issues we were interested in. And one of the questions that was fascinating to us is this nurture versus nature question, because right. Dominic was only 9 years old when he was abducted. And we know that he became one of the commanders of the same army that abducted him. So we were interested in this transition from this innocent boy. Like, do we have moral compass? How does this evil is born in someone. So these were issues that were interesting for us. But other than that, of course, the main issue, how to do justice in this situation, how to bring justice to Dominique Ongwen, who was himself a victim, and how to bring justice to all these victims he hurt. And that these were the main areas that we were trying to explore.
I think, you know, for me, my background academically is film and philosophy. And so I've spent years asking some of these sort of existential questions about, you know, when, what is a person? What makes a human being? When do we actually start being, you know, as the existentialists, the French and the German existentialists teach us, when do we start being responsible, you know, for the decisions we make? And Dominic, in this case, I wonder, Emil, if you can give our listeners a little bit of context to his, we meet Joseph Kony's wife and at least his two daughters, and which is just mind-boggling footage that you were able to access some of, not only some of these people, but getting access to the ICC and the trials themselves. But Emil, can you help our listeners understand a little bit more about the context of the LRA? Uganda's been a difficult, unsettled place for many years. Can you talk a little bit about that as well?
So the LRA came about as a response to the oppression of the by the current president of Uganda, Yoweri Museveni, and he was oppressing the Acholi people, and they formed this guerrilla army to fight back, but then it turned out into this, you can call it a Christian cult mixed with like spiritualism and other ideas, and so it went from, like, you can call it a legitimate like rebellion into like something more like mystic and cultic, and in fact it still exists. Joseph Kony, he is still free, roaming around somewhere like in the bush, either in Central African Republic or Sudan or Congo. Nobody really knows where he is, but he's still free. But he only has, I think, about 100 people with him at the moment, and they're not fighting in Uganda anymore. The president, the government, and the president army made a great effort to remove them from the scene in Uganda, and they're not really a threat to the northern Uganda anymore.
I can just add that Kony is still there, and also the president of Uganda is the same person for the last 37 years. So the actors haven't changed.
37 years. And I think I love how you, in the film, you really do raise a lot of questions. You brilliantly raise so many questions about oppression. And I love, Emil, that you use that word. We're talking about colonialism. We're talking about the division of Africa back in the late 18th and 19th century, and you know, what are some of the bigger implications? But you don't ever really point the finger at the government, but we certainly have some local people, Ugandans, who are saying, "Hang on a minute here, the crimes committed by Kony and his." Members, his military, his militia, whatever you call it, are very similar to some of the crimes that some of the government troops have been committing over the past many, many years under the guise of, I don't know what it would be under the guise of, but some sort of moral authority. Lucas, does that sound right to you?
In our film, it was important for us to bring context to this conflict in northern Uganda, because it's very often that conflicts in parts of the world that we don't know about are very simplified, and they are shown as this irrational fights, but people are rational, and this conflict has a very deep background that started actually maybe in colonial times, when one ethnic groups was pitted against another one, and that happened in Uganda, where British authorities chose Acholi people to serve in their army, and this army was used to fight other ethnic groups within the border of protectorate of Uganda. And also what Emil said, LRA also started as a rebellion, like a self-defense rebellion of people in the north. only after a while it transformed into this cult. But we it was important for us to show things in the context, in a more deeper context.
It seems convenient also that, you know, that, you know, I think this whole cult image has been used by the government in Western media to paint the LRA as this crazy army of crazy people, when in fact, you know, it's an army of oppressed and poor and struggling people who had no other person to turn to, and the international community were not giving any aid or help, stepping in or helping. You know, it was a huge human catastrophe with all these camps. There were the Acholi people were interned in camps by the government under horrible conditions, and many more people died from that than that they were killed by the LRA.
The lawyer Ayena, who's a fascinating character in his own right, I think a film could be made about him and his story. Quite a wonderful guy in his own respect, it seems to me. But he says at least two times, maybe three times in the film, and it seems to me to be an undertone. You know, Western people, and I think he probably even maybe said white people, need to see Africa, need to see Uganda. And then he gets even more specific. They need to see Northern Uganda in a new light, in a new way, in a new perspective. And would you say that the film maybe started out as this historical document and narrative about a trial and so on, but it became much bigger than that, Lucas? Does that make sense? Like, so it's not, you guys don't attack colonialism. You really don't in this film. And it's understated, but it's there. And it's a question that has to be asked.
The film has a couple of layers, and there is this political and more current layer, but Emil and I were always interested in this deeper, more universal or philosophical layer that you can talk about when you talk about this trial. So that was always there for us.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to BOLLandBranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Us.
Yeah, what's the other line that he uses? Something about the metaphysical aspects of this case. He even said that, I think, in his closing remarks, does he not?
We wanted, our film serves in a way as a platform for many different voices. So Ayena speaks about this lack of understanding in the West, but also we give platform to other characters, like this Rosalba Oiwa, who is this human rights activist, and she talks about restorative justice. It was for us just really important to put these voices in our film, because they were not heard before. And for most of these people, it was really important to speak up.
Sure, sure. Emil, maybe I don't know if you want to go here or not, but I'm interested to know a little bit about your religious background. Did that have, or not, did that have an impact on how the lens that you were wearing, you know, as you directed, as you edited, as you shot footage? Because I mean, we've got the scripture out of the gate, the Old Testament scripture, we have it, this spiritualistic narrative, there's an occultic narrative. It's fascinating how, and there's a lot of questions embedded here, Emil, but it's fascinating to me when you get to, is Jackson his name? Coney Spiritual Advisor. I don't even know what to say. I mean, it's unbelievable, the words coming out of his mouth. And I'll leave that as a catalyst for people to go to see the film. By the way, it's not premiering, but it's going to be at Hot Docs here in Toronto. And you need to see this film. And down the road, I hope you guys get a very wide distribution on this film. But Emil, anyway, there was about six or seven questions, I think, embedded.
Yeah.
In, but pick one.
I got it. Yeah, yeah. No, but I think from the outset, it was crucial for Lucas and I to include Christianity's role in this whole conflict, especially seen in the light of, you know, I think that everywhere where there's oppression, there's ground for radicalization, whether and people can take whichever religion they want and use it
Absolutely.
To their purpose. So I don't view it as any different than people taking, you know, the Quran and, you know, and taking, you know, like Salafists who look at very like look at it from the letter, you know, and take it and bring it and living into their life like one to one in a way. It's the same as a Chama Jackson who uses Ezekiel to like his you know
justification
his guide or to justify all his actions.
Well,
and I felt that
Emil, he says the line, the quote was, I wrote it down, I had to pause the film, because that's how God works.
Exactly.
Are you kidding me?
and I think it's a good example of how you can, you know, you can take any scripture, you know, and turn it into your own propaganda and use it, you know, like to indoctrinate people and to make them do what you want. And I think that was the strength of Joseph Kony, and he managed to lure a lot of people into this realm of his.
Clearly, I don't even like to use the word charismatic, but clearly there was an appeal there. And when you have that rebellious sort of pushback, that undertone, that political narrative there, it kind of makes sense when you're dealing with a people who, any kind of group, it seems to me, that are oppressed, they're looking for a way out. And as the incremental changes that must have occurred for a man like Dominic to get where he was, it is fascinating to me. It really is on so many levels. Lucas, do you feel that you have a sense, you know, I love too that you bring up restorative justice in the film, and that's coming from a Ugandan perspective, but do you have a sense, does this make you more cynical about human nature? Or do you say, you know what, there is hope, you know, maybe Dominic is going to see the light in a sense. Maybe we can get, I don't know, maybe we can piece this together in a new way.
I am actually quite optimistic, because Dominic, actually, there are only two people from this whole conflict that are facing trial, and Dominic is one of these two. But thousands and thousands of these former child soldiers, they got amnesty, and they don't have to face justice, because
Right.
the scale of atrocities was so big that it was impossible to trial everybody. So the government of Uganda started this program, clemency program. And they went back to their villages. Of course, they experienced many problems and traumas. There are social problems, but somehow things are moving forward. So I am quite optimistic that it's possible. But I think this restorative justice was a chance that was missed. I think like many people would like to see something like maybe a Truth and Reconciliation Committee, like in South Africa, like this haven't it hadn't happened in northern Uganda.
Well, there was certainly an attempt of it in Rwanda, and I remember working in country in Rwanda in a Rohingya province and being in a community where I was talking to a woman through a translator and surrounded by mostly men, and her husband had been killed by somebody in their community. And this community was designed for people to supposedly work together towards restoring, you know, this idea of I guess family and relationships and so on. Emil, how about you? I mean, do you have a better sense of what justice really means in a situation like this? I mean, it's just, it really is mind-boggling. You start to hear that, what was it, 80 crimes that he was charged with, and you just, how does a human being get there? You know,
I mean, I must say, like, making this film has probably confused me even more, or, you know, like, because
sorry, that's no, I don't mean to laugh, but I'm kind of with you. I'm kind of with you on that.
I think there are so many complexities and so many areas to take into consideration when you talk about justice, and also because there are, like, these very different perception of justice. You know, I think in the West we have this idea of retribution to kind of punish that, but I think most of us know that it doesn't work. So I think that making the film has opened my eyes to this Ugandan approach where it's based on forgiveness and reconciliation. And I really hope that people, when they watch the film, that they will think about these ideas and that it will maybe broaden their horizon and that we can start to discuss, you know, how we will implement justice and maybe look at new ways of doing it.
Well, I love that, and I think it makes so much sense. And I'm so glad, again, you added that restorative component in. I think at the root of many religions, incredibly violent, right? This old, I'm going to call it this Old Testament kind of punitive notion. Even the idea, what's the theological word? The eschatology is rooted around the day of judgment, right? It's coming. Your hands are going to be cut off too. You know, and I hope that this story, this film, gets people in those positions asking questions about the story, the narrative. Maybe we need to look at this in a new way, and I think that's absolutely brilliant. Lucas, did you get a sense that Dominic? I was looking for the line here. I think I found it. He said at the near the beginning of the film, when the judge is asking him, you know, to make a statement, and he started to try to tell his story, which I my heart went out to him at that point. But he said, "I think I deny all charges." Did you get a sense from him at all, as you edited, as you filmed, and so on, that there was a sense of repentance there? Is that the right word?
I'm not sure. It's something that I think Dominic has to face deeply in his heart, in his mind. I think it's also changing for him, judging by how he relate to the charges, because he apologized for causing pain, but I think he really feels also deeply hurt and betrayed, because he sees himself as a victim who didn't get help, and he surrendered and was transported to the ICC, and I think that's not the result he expected. So I think there is also a lot of disappointment and bitterness.
I think that's probably a very fair response. I mean, how could you not expect otherwise, in a sense? And he must, as he hears some of this, the line of him saying, I remember, what little I know about trauma and PTSD is that sometimes memory is recollection is pushed out, right? And so that's a fascinating question as well.
I can also add that, like, on a human level, if you think about someone like Dominic, who for 5 years, almost every day, you know, was sitting in the courtroom, and many different people were talking about him, and you do it day by day and month by month.
Sure,
must be like a huge burden to carry.
Oh, and even hearing stuff that you would probably want to stand up and say, I didn't do that. That wasn't me. I don't remember that, et cetera. Right?
But also, it's important for us to, you know, we are talking about what he has been accused. It's very important for us not to try to minimalize his guilt. You know, we are very clear about all the horrible things. And I think his tragedy, it's even bigger because of that, because you can see how who he became.
Well, and obviously we want to think about how do we avoid this in the future? How do other countries, how do other political parties avoid these kinds of things? And yet we see very similar things going on in the world today, Syria and the Middle East, and we've got the Ukrainian war and so on. Horrifying things are happening. And I know we have to wrap up here in a couple of minutes, which is unfortunate. I'm hoping we get maybe another opportunity to chat. But Emil, do you think the ICC is broken? I mean, it certainly seems like they're trying one person. Clearly this is some kind of metaphor, but was that a hope of yours that coming out of this film, people would be asking some bigger questions about what does it actually mean to try someone internationally?
Yeah, I guess, again, we're trying to raise some questions, and I think it's up to the audience to make their own conclusions. But of course, at least for me, when working on the film, it was like peeling an onion, and layer upon layer was kind of revealing itself. And I think like this kind of limit of the ICC, it is very limited in many ways, because they cannot really investigate crimes and investigate sitting presidents in practical terms. And it makes a pretty unfair scene from, like, for instance, the Ugandan perspective. And also, when you go to the ICC website, most of the ongoing situations, as they call them, the ongoing cases, they are set in Africa. And it raises the question, like, why not Bush or Blair or the Western leaders that have been accused of similar crimes? It definitely opened up a Pandora's box for me, and it's some of those questions that we would really like to for the audience to reflect on.
Yeah, and I think most audiences will. I mean, I can't help but get away from the image of the, and I maybe it's more than three. I couldn't quite figure out how that was, that the ICC, those proceedings were working, but you had at least those three older white men in their robes sort of looking down over the proceedings. And it's the strength of that metaphor is certainly not lost on me. We've got to wrap just in a minute or two. Lucas, do you see coming back to this story for a part two, for a follow-up? Could that be a possibility?
I know that the ICC is seriously trying to find and arrest Connie. Maybe that's part two.
maybe that's part two. Well, listen, what a pleasure meeting you both. Thank you so much. Are you going to be in Toronto? Or are you
Likewise.
Coming to the city?
I will be in Toronto.
Fantastic.
I just became a dad, so I'm going to stay
here. Well, you better stay home. You have some responsibilities there. That's fantastic. Congratulations.
Yeah. Thank you.
And that's a wonderful time. What a brilliant film. Thank you so much for telling this story, for taking the risk to put it out there. Emil Langball and Lucas Canapa here talking about their new film, Theater of Violence. It's going to be at Hot Docs. It's the Grand Jury Prize winner at Movies That Matter. Thank you to you both for your authenticity and your openness today here and joining me on Face to Face.
Thank you so much.
Well, there you have it, my conversation with Emil Langval and Lucas Canapa talking about their film, Theater of Violence. Compelling, important, and moving film, touching on so many different issues, and probably, from my perspective, the most important one, restorative justice. What does it actually mean? What does it mean in different cultures? And this idea, once again, of us leaning in a little closer and listening with, you know, mind, body, and soul, and not just sitting on the edge of our seat waiting to provide some sort of, you know, solution. This film really is about understanding context and stepping in. It's about so many other things. Thank you, Emil. Thank you, Lucas, for joining me here on Face to Face today. Don't forget, you can see this film at Hot Docs, hotdocs.ca. Check it out. Hopefully, if you're listening post-Hot Docs, you'll have an opportunity to see it either at another festival or on a video on demand platform in the not so distant future. So stay tuned for that. And more info about what I do, davidpecklive.com, facetofacelive.ca. You can get access to a whole slew of many, many conversations. They're also available on YouTube. But wherever you listen, please do subscribe to Face to Face. We'd appreciate that. Subscribe on YouTube if you're listening/watching. leave us a thumbs up. And more importantly, we'd love a review. Please leave us a review on iTunes. It all helps. It drives traffic, and it really is remarkable how things can change when people start to pay attention. Thank you so much for listening and for joining us here on the show. The conversation is coming right up. My name's David Peck, and you're listening to Face to Face.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.